Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Happy Monday. Thanks for being here and welcome to another show.
We are back after a good best of show on Friday. I hope you caught some interviews that you may have missed that we've done, which is nice, but it was also nice to have a little bit of a vacay day.
You know, we've done so much stuff. We cover so much content that sometimes I don't even know where to start. Like, there's so many things that we probably forget about that we've even covered, to be honest.
Yeah, I feel the same right? way.
Yeah. It's crazy. So yeah, again, if you miss any of our shows or interviews, we post everything as a podcast. Just search Let's Go There on the radio.com app and where podcasts are available. But, you know, I'm very proud to say, Ryan, that I finally did my vision board last night. And my relationship vision board, which I've never done before. It was actually a very nice experience. I recommend it to all those who are in partnerships.
Okay. Well, I love that you are the new guru of all things relationships.
For now, right? Until the next crazy
moment.
Until
it all comes crashing.
Exactly. But the funny thing is, so we basically gave each other magazines and we were both cutting up things that resonated and he was throwing it in his pile. And he ended up picking up things like marriage and a baby and all this. And so I said to him, I was like, wow, well, I know we're not going to be doing this year, but it's really nice that you're thinking about those things. And he's like, oh, I didn't realize this was a vision board just for the year. I thought it was for our entire relationship, which is really cute.
Well, yeah, that's interesting. That's so cute.
Yeah.
I love that.
So, yeah, go to my Instagram. I teased a little bit about what we did at Cheryl Lazar. But coming up on the show today, speaking of Instagram and going viral, Gorilla Glue Girl Tesca Brown is joining us at 5:30 p.m. Pacific, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. It was a really interesting conversation. It will kind of make you feel bad for everything you thought about her. Plus, the Biden administration has suggested it will add ex-gender markers to federal documents. Details on that coming up in 30 minutes. But first, let's get into some what's trending this hour. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer gave us news today on the COVID relief bill.
Democrats remain hard at work preparing the desperately needed COVID relief bill, which is on track to go to the president's desk before the March 14th expiration of unemployment insurance benefits.
Well, it seems like less drama than before, so hopefully it gets passed by March 14th. And Google has informed its advertising partners today that its platforms will resume accepting all political ads starting Wednesday. In case you're wondering or you want to push out some political ads, they banned them following last month's insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. And this matters because Google and Facebook have been instituting political ad bans on and off for the past few months to slow the spread of misinformation and stop confusion around sensitive events like the Capitol attack and the election. So we'll see how that plays out right now. And finally, Georgia's Black population turned out in record numbers for the November election. They helped the victory for Joe Biden, the first Democrat to win the state since 1992. And now Republicans in the state want to make it harder for Georgians to vote. Of course they do. Georgia isn't the only state introducing harsh new voting laws. 165 bills to restrict voting access have been introduced across 33 states. That's over four times the amount of similar bills from roughly this time last year, according to the Brennan Center. So we'll be continuing to follow this story as it gets revealed, because this seems quite messed up. But that was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news, Ryan?
Okay, so Kate Hudson is finally speaking out about the backlash over the autism representation happening in Sia's new movie, Music. It's time for your tea report, those pop culture stories trending right now. During a sit-down interview on Jimmy Kimmel Live, she addressed the backlash, saying she knows there should be more conversation surrounding proper representation. Here she is.
I hope so. I think when people see the film, you know, that they will see the amount of love and sensitivity that was put into it. But it is an important conversation to have, and it's, you know, not just about this movie, but as a whole, you know, about representation. And if, you know, for me, when I hear that there's anybody that feels left out, I feel terrible. And right.
So if you don't know what all of this is coming from, I know we talked about it before here on the Tea Report, but Hudson, she stars in the Sia-directed picture opposite of Maddie Ziegler as her older sister, a former drug dealer who finds herself responsible for her special needs sibling who communicates through a device that speaks for her and who always listens to music via, like, super large headphones. Well, everyone was kind of coming at Maddie because they were just saying this was an awful representation. This isn't true. She should have used someone who was actually who actually had autism. And of course, Sia has defended the movie, but also has gotten in some social media fights with people who have, like, called her out. But at least Kate Hudson understands the need for representation. And so I think that's what's important. And I really appreciated that response. But I still don't think it's going to get the same support because Sia was just being just disgusting about the way she was reacting to the news.
She just wanted to give Ziegler another gig.
I guess. But that's your Tea Report. I got more coming up next hour.
Well, next up on the show, the Supreme Court has allowed for the release of Trump's tax returns to New York prosecutors. So will we all finally get the answers we've been asking for? Does he have something to hide? Well, the Washington Post joins us for that next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
The Supreme Court rejected former President Donald Trump's last effort to keep his private financial records from the Manhattan District Attorney, ending a long legal battle. And now joining us is David Farenthold, political investigative reporter at the Washington Post, as we dive in, because David, it feels like we might finally get a look at his tax returns. Am I right? Is this happening finally?
That's right. It's not going to be tomorrow, I don't think. The way we would see them, the district attorney will see them soon, and presumably he will look at them, analyze them, and if he files some sort of case in the future against Trump or against somebody in his company and attaches them as an exhibit, then we'll get to see them. So it's not going to happen tomorrow, but the chances of it happening eventually have gone up.
So is this also including what happened with the Cohen payments as well? Like, how much of this is that, and then also anything else existing outside of that?
Well, it's a good question, because this investigation began with Cohen's payments to Stormy Daniels, you know, where Cohen was basically paying off Stormy Daniels and then getting reimbursed by the Trump Organization. But, you know, prosecutors can kind of go wherever they want, and it seems like that's what the Manhattan DA has done in this case. He's looking at all kinds of transactions of all different Trump properties, many of them, most of them having nothing to do with Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. So these tax returns, I think, would cover just a huge range of financial information over many years. It's kind of a sign of how broadly the investigation has widened since it began with Cohen.
So why has he fought so hard to hold this back? It just makes it feel, I'm not even a lawyer or work for the government.
Of course.
But right away, it brings up some flags. So, like, wouldn't his folks feel that way too?
Well, Trump has always resisted anybody knowing what's going on inside his finances. The way he's always tried to make it is that the Trump Organization is a black box, and the only way you can know what's happening inside it is to ask him. And then when he tells you something, you don't have any way of fact-checking it. And it's been that way with journalists, but it's also been that way with prosecutors. And so, you know, there's nothing that says that there has to be something illegal in there or that he's hiding some sort of wrongdoing. This has been his approach from the beginning, which is that the only person who can tell you about me is me. And so, by extension, if I'm lying to you, you won't know if I'm lying to you.
Again, we're talking to David Farenthold, who's a political investigative reporter at the Washington Post, about Trump's tax returns and how we might see them very soon.
But I guess, wasn't Trump kind of expecting this? Because as soon as, you know, I think this is why the conversation around pardoning himself and all of these things, and of course, how states were going to charge him versus the federal government was going to charge him, was going to be different. So what are his lawyers, and what is he kind of saying in the midst of all of this?
Well, Trump is saying this is a witch hunt. You know, this person is just out to get me. The Cyrus Vance, the Manhattan DA, is a Democrat who is. So he's saying, you know, these are just my enemies trying to get me. Trump's lawyers have said, you know, look, Cy Vance is looking at everything, but he doesn't have anything, which is what you'd expect your lawyers to say, right? Lawyers probably wouldn't say ahead of time, he's found everything, Trump is toast. So we won't really know until Vance files something, if he ever does. He's been working on this case for 18 months, 2 years. This was sort of the last piece. Vance wasn't going to file anything until he had these tax returns in hand. Now he has to sort of lay his cards on the table. Does he have a case on Donald Trump, or has he been searching through all this and hasn't found anything?
What does he?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's one path. But what if, the other path is taken? What happens
if Vance doesn't file any case?
Yeah,
but then we'll never see these tax returns. I mean. Well, you know, somebody could leak them, I guess. But Vance has gotten them under a grand jury procedure. And grand juries are supposed to be secret. If you leak what was given to a grand jury, you can face legal consequences. So, you know, there's no day in which Vance just has to, you know, put these all in a PDF and send them out to the news media. We'll have to wait and to see if he files anything. That said, Vance has gone way down this road. He spent all this time before the Supreme Court litigating it twice to try to get these tax returns. This man's a politician. He staked his career and his legacy on this case. And I think if he comes up with nothing, I mean, that's still a possibility, but it seems very damaging to Vance.
But what are the consequences to that, right? It's not like are we going to see, you know, presidents outside of, like, once Biden's done, are we going to see presidents refuse to do their tax returns? Is this something that actually impacted the historic kind of just history of being, like, running for president and having to show your tax returns?
I think Trump already did that. You know, Trump ran for president twice without showing his tax returns, and he won one time and almost won another time, or got 75 million people to vote for him another time. I think the idea that a president has to release his tax returns or people will think he's dishonest, like so many things that Trump did, Trump proved there's no iron rule that says you have to do that. He still lost this time, but I think it's hard to argue that he lost because of that. Yeah. So the next time we have a president running who's got a business, who's got complicated tax returns, you know, I don't think they're going to feel social pressure to produce this because Trump ignored that rule and, you know, got through fine.
So what if Vance does find something, this gets revealed, what happens now?
Well, this is a criminal investigation. So Vance could charge Trump, he could charge, you know, other people who work for his company, he could charge the company as a company. So there's all kinds of things that he could do. But until he does it, you know, it's really hard to know what the consequence would be for Trump. You know, there could be something really big. There could be something small. There could be a whole lot of counts, or there could be one. There was an interesting story the other day about that Vance has brought on this guy who is sort of a veteran mob prosecutor to help with this case, maybe indicating at least that there's a lot of complexity here. I don't think it's an indication that Trump is a mobster. He's going to be charged with mob, you know, like crimes. But it's an indication of how complicated this case is. And maybe a reason why we're not probably going to see charges tomorrow. You know, I don't think Vance was waiting to get this and then he was going to charge Trump the next day. It's going to take a while probably to figure out what the heck's in these things.
Mm-hmm. That was David Farenthold, political investigative reporter at The Washington Post. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Now coming up on the show, news today that the Biden administration has suggested it will add X gender markers to federal documents. More details on that next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
LGBTQ advocates have been in talks with the Biden administration about an executive action to add X gender markers to all federal documents, including passports and social security cards, according to the ACLU. This is big news, an early Yaz queen, you can say, but what does it all mean? Well, Kate Sossin is with us, LGBTQ plus reporter at 19th News. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to join you.
Yeah, so currently 20 states in Washington, D.C. have such policies. How important is this to implement at a federal level?
So a lot of LGBTQ experts and, you know, non-binary, intersex, and trans people think this is really critical because a lot of folks have IDs that just simply don't match. They have IDs that say have a gender marker X, and then they have passports that don't match. Or they haven't been able to obtain IDs at all. And that can mean that they have trouble getting harassed in public places, or they don't have access to voting, and run into all kinds of problems. So people feel like this is really, really pressing.
Because I was wondering how many states are already allowing, you know, folks to do the X gender marker?
It's 20 right now, and it's growing. Actually, some states have even passed bills that will allow this in the future. Illinois has passed a bill, and even though they're not issuing gender marker X's already, they will be in the years to come. And so it really feels like it's only a matter of time. TSA, for example, will accept X gender markers and let you fly with them. So, you know, this is something federally that seems to already be happening. It's just a matter of getting, you know, the federal government to start issuing those documents.
Yeah. And what's the timeline for this? What are you hearing?
Well, that's a great question. I asked the Biden administration on this because this was a campaign promise, right? That Joe Biden said, you know, that he would do this. And they have declined to answer. I think that they don't want to, you know, create an expectation around this. But it does seem like they've been in talks around this and about how to do it best. And, you know, I have been hearing chatter that there are agencies that are trying to figure out how to do this best. And as we've seen, like, if you go onto the White House pages, some of the options have already changed, not in terms of federal docs, but drop down menus, right? So it used to just say, you know, what is your gender? And it would say male, female. Now there's a third gender option already in the White House. So some of this work is already being done at the federal level.
Amazing. Kate Sawson again is with us, LGBTQ plus reporter at 19th News, as we talk about this latest news that the Biden administration is suggesting it will add X gender markers to federal documents.
So let's say this X gender marker actually becomes passed. What happens if they still don't allow people, or they still don't send out the new documents that have the X? Because I know there's someone going through that right now where they've been waiting forever.
This is really critical. So actually, the federal government has been ordered by a court repeatedly to issue passports that have gender marker X's because Dana Zim, who's an intersex person, sued to get an accurate passport with a gender marker X and won that lawsuit. And the Trump administration repeatedly declined to issue a gender marker X on a passport. And so It seems that the Biden administration, under court order and also of its own accord, would issue those passports. So they're kind of required to. The Trump administration had been continuing to fight that. It seems like, of course, the Biden administration won't. The other piece of this that's really important is advocates are asking for forms where you don't necessarily need to collect gender for identification purposes to just remove it, right? Because we're at a point now where a lot of people feel like gender is just uncomfortable anyway. So they're saying, look, like categories of race, like why do we need this on a document to begin with? But for things like passports, which the US does not control, it's international law, right? Countries require a gender marker. They don't have the option of removing it. So they are advocating for an X gender marker. So some documents will see the removal of gender altogether, maybe, or we'll see a push for that. And then in other areas, they're going to ask for a gender marker X because they want data collection so that LGBTQ people can get services.
Yeah.
And also, just as we wrap things up, voting. It's so important. I mean, according to your article last February, the UCLA School of Law estimated that 42% of eligible trans voters, that's over 370,000 people might be barred from voting in the general election due to voter ID laws in 35 states. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah, 46% of trans voters, you know, I mean, and that data is a little bit old, right? It's from 2015, but yeah, it did not have access to an accurate ID that reflected their name or their gender marker. There have been incredible hurdles for people to get access to these things, and the pandemic has really made that a lot more difficult because courts have been shut down, DMVs have been shut down. People, even when they're open, don't want to go to them because it's not safe. And so a lot of people haven't been able to update their documentation.
That was Kate Sawson, LGBTQ plus reporter at the 19th News. Thanks so much for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, coming up on the show, these two women skipped a vaccine line in Florida by dressing up as old grannies. I mean, is this where we're at? We're going to be discussing that next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, we've covered this before, people skipping the line to get the vaccine or waiting for the leftover vaccines at the end of the day, which I feel like if you're going to throw out the vaccines, you might as well just give it to some extra folks who are waiting. And like, I'm not sure how unethical that is. Yet, this is definitely unethical and wrong. Please don't do this because you're definitely going to the bad place. So this story is being shared. It's of two young Florida women who posed as elderly individuals. They posed as senior citizens to skip the vaccine line. So, and according to this article on Mike.com, it actually worked in the past because the vaccine cards they were carrying had been issued by the CDC and indicated that they'd already received their first doses of the vaccine.
First of all, what is this, like Punked or something, where they're like, you're dressing up in, it just feels like this is a prank show. It feels so stupid. These women who have the privilege of being able to go dressed up all in this Golden Girls garb, like old face and all these things, it just is so disgusting. These folks need jail time, even though the staffers called the sheriff, but the sheriff didn't arrest them, only gave them like trespassing warnings. How are people ever supposed to understand the severity of doing something like this? Like, this is the wrong time to be scamming right now. It's awful.
Oh. Yeah. Also, you're enabling other people to do stuff like this. If you're not issuing a ticket or arresting someone, then you would think others think that, oh, this seems like something that I would do. And we know how many scammers are out there, including during this time, who will take advantage. A lot of people have also noted how it reeks of white privilege, because this being any other person, Black, a person of color, who already get arrested at higher rates than white people, I mean, it shows the obvious hypocrisy here.
Well, apparently this duo's like disguise has worked in the past for them.
Yeah,
because I'm just confused on how they've gotten this, so those CDC's cards. Like, is this a part of like people buying those cards online? Because we talked about all the levels of scams that have kind of started during this time, because people are so anxious to getting out of the house and doing whatever they can to do this. It's just disgusting.
No, it seems like they've actually done this. I don't know if that was a fake card. I wouldn't run it past them, but I think they actually were either old women or who knows. Maybe they're putting on other outfits.
34 like, and 44 is not old women. They're actually.
I mean,
you call me
elderly all the time.
Well, yeah, but. Because I know that you're elderly. I don't know these women.
But just basically, like, as these stories continue coming out, this just shows the bad side of humanity, right? Like, this is definitely the side.
It's not shocking, though.
That makes you feel like, okay, something is wrong here. Something needs to be done. But it's not shocking because there needs to be a better system. The fact is, if you can so easily do this around one of the biggest things we're going through in our world, in our lifetime, and you can just play it off as if you're someone else, like identity theft, then something is wrong in the system.
Yeah, I'm also not shocked that this has happened in Florida. But I hate how the director of the health department in Orange County in Florida, he basically was just like, this is the hottest commodity that is out there right now. So we have to be very careful. Why are you talking about this? Like, this is just like not... It's this vaccine is what's needed to keep our lives going, right? And I feel like the severity and the seriousness isn't even being like handled, because they're not even, I guess they weren't even really prepared for this. They said that the scam rate is probably higher than we suspect. We should have been prepared to know that there's going to be all these high level scams happening. And of course, Florida is the one to like drop the ball and just, I don't know. You just got to be aware. If you're out there, please people don't do this. It's just ridiculous.
And if you see something, say something.
For sure.
That's all. If you see a bunch of old women, old folks who are on their cell phones taking selfies and doing TikToks, they might not be that old. I'm just saying. Coming up on the show, loneliness and isolation have impacted the LGBTQ+ community during COVID-19. And it's something most people aren't being honest about. More on this new study coming up at 5:20 Pacific, 8:20 Eastern.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back, and coming up on the show, Gorilla Glue Girl Tesca Brown is joining us in 30 minutes. Gotta say her name because I kind of feel bad that a woman is being called the Gorilla Glue Girl.
Yeah, I mean, I never really liked it, and I think it's so interesting because I feel like I was forced to do this interview. I did not want to do this interview, but I'm happy that we did do this interview, especially after the conversation that we had with her. And so I think you will find out everything that you would probably want to know from this interview you're about to hear later.
Yeah, we're asking those questions. And I think we're taking definitely a different perspective than a lot of the other media interviews she's done, because it is more nuanced than you think, right? We all wish that we could become a viral star, but you're going to hear a story.
Do we wish that?
I mean, I think a lot of people are like, yeah, like we want to put out our work. We want people to see it. We want to create an impact.
But that's not what she was doing.
Well, she created some sort of impact, but you're going to see the other side of that, what happens when you go viral. First, let's get into some what's trending this hour. President Joe Biden's nominee for Attorney General Merrick Garland answered questions today at his confirmation hearing. And a question from Senator Joe Kennedy has raised some eyebrows about whether, quote, biological males competing in an all-female sports would deprive women of the opportunity to compete in sports. That was very problematic. But his response to a question from Senator Cory Booker highlighting fatal violence against trans Americans, particularly Black trans women, however, is winning praise right now.
These are hate crimes, and this is the job of the Justice Department to stop this, to find them, to enforce, and to penalize. And that's what the section of the Special Litigation Unit in the Civil Rights Division is intended to do. There is the Shepherd Bird Act, which was particularly aimed at this. And
So it's good to know that this administration is prioritizing the trans individuals, trans community out there in this country, specifically trans women of color, because it's been a long time coming, and hopefully that will shift into policy as well. And finally, an independent investigation led by Aurora, Colorado City Council finds that the Aurora police officers involved in the fatal confrontation with Elijah McClain in August 2019 did not have a legal basis to stop or physically restrain him. Now, McClain, if you can remember, was stopped on August 24th, 2019 in Aurora by officers answering a call reporting a suspicious person in the area. The initial stop of him was questionable as, quote, none of the officers articulated a crime that they thought had committed or was being committed. And this decision had ramifications, according to this report, for the rest of the encounter, including a chokehold and an injection of ketamine. Now, the police declined to comment further in the report, but I hope there will be some repercussions now that this independent investigation was done. And that was what's trending this hour. What's happening in entertainment news, Ryan?
Another day, another offensive joke that fell flat on SNL this weekend. It's time for your tea report. Those pop culture stories trending right now. Michael Shea is under fire again after he cracked a joke about the vaccination efforts in Israel. Here is that cringy moment.
Israel is reporting that they vaccinated half of their population. And I'm going to guess it's the Jewish half.
So, accused of spreading lies with his joke, perpetuating ongoing stereotypes about Israel, and openly stoking the flames of discord in the region and around the world about the region, there were many calls for him to apologize immediately. Shira, did you see it?
I did. I actually do watch SNL sometimes.
What are your thoughts? Weekend.
The minute I watched it, I kind of did laugh, and I'm a Jew, because it was, low-hanging fruit. Sorry, that's the reality, not to say it's right, but it's low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, that was an interesting conversation going on online, and of course Clubhouse, of people feeling offended by it, and
it's an offensive joke,
offending about it, like it's, even if they're Jewish, and so there's so many conversations happening, but they gotta stop it. SNL has to figure something out, because Michael Shea is the head writer and he continues to not care, one, about, I guess, cancel culture, but he also just doesn't care about like being smarter with his jokes.
Well, no, I mean, they have their group, and he definitely threw that probably to someone, was like, is this offensive or is this that? And then they're like,
no, he didn't. He just said a transphobe. He's the head writer, Shira. He doesn't have to approve any jokes.
Oh, he doesn't have other people to bounce off of?
No, I mean, obviously there's a writing room, but he doesn't have to get their approval on it. He just did a transphobic joke not too long ago, so.
Listen, they go through these, they have rehearsals, so they need to have a better filter of what they decide to let on air.
I agree. Let us know your thoughts at LGT Show. And that is your tea report. I got more coming up next hour.
Well, coming up next on the show, the latest study to reveal the impacts of COVID-19 on gay and bisexual men, plus what we can learn from the results. That's next.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Two new studies have looked at the impact of stay-at-home orders on gay and bisexual men. And the results, not surprising, they suggest loneliness, boredom, and isolation are driving some men to seek sex with others outside of their household, their bubble. Others are turning to tech to fulfill a need for connection. And joining us is one of the individuals behind one of these studies, Ian Holloway, director of the UCLA Gay Sexuality and Social Policy Initiative. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, this is such an interesting initiative, and this is something new, right?
Yeah, we just launched this year. This Gay Sexuality and Social Policy Initiative is focused on really understanding the intricacies and nuances of gay male sexuality and the social policies that impact gay and bisexual men's lives. So many people don't realize that over 70 countries continue to criminalize homosexuality, and our work is global in nature. This study that we'll be talking about today, for example, was conducted in over 20 countries. And so we're looking at some of the different policy environments that impact the lives of gay and bisexual men.
Yeah, so let's break this down, because I think when I first read the headline, which is like loneliness and isolation drive some gay men to break down or break lockdown rules and seek sex, I felt like, well, duh, because that's what we've been seeing, like a gaze over COVID and just, you know, people just not following the rules. So tell me more about this study and why people should be looking at this from a perspective that doesn't feel like old news.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think one of the big headlines from this work is that actually nearly two-thirds of the guys in our study, and this was over 10,000 gay, bisexual, and other men who have sex with men in 20 countries, were following stay-at-home orders in their local jurisdictions. And so that's kind of what I like to lead with, because I think, as you mentioned, the gaze over COVID movement, kind of targeting gay and bisexual men as culprits in terms of breaking these lockdown orders, isn't helpful to kind of building resilience in our communities. And in fact, this, you know, our study is about gay and bisexual men, but this is, you know, an issue that impacts all of humanity. These physical distancing measures are contributing to loneliness, isolation, mental health issues. And so what we tried to do was really understand how this was impacting gay and bisexual men specifically.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking to Ian Holloway, director of the UCLA Gay Sexuality and Social Policy Initiative. So now that you've discovered this through this work, how do we change things, or what do you do with this information?
Yeah. So I think, you know, gay and bisexual men and other men who have sex with men came into this pandemic with a number of challenges in terms of health and mental health. So we know that there are huge disparities in terms of mental health issues impacting gay and bisexual men, many of which stem from these repressive policy environments and places, you know, where gay and bisexual male behavior is criminalized. And so I think we want to pay special attention to this population. And that's what I hope one of the key takeaways is. You know, the odds of feeling anxious for gay and bisexual men in our study who stayed in was 37% higher. The odds of feeling lonely since the crisis began was 36% higher. But we also found some promising data in terms of how gay men were managing loneliness and isolation amidst the pandemic through technology. Mm-hmm. So lots of use of text messaging and video phone calls. We partnered with a gay social networking app called Hornet to conduct this research. And Hornet is a global networking app for gay and bisexual men. And almost 95% of the guys in our study indicated that they were using Hornet as a way to maintain connection to gay communities amidst the pandemic. So I think, you know, focusing our energies on technology-based interventions or programs that can really speak to the unique vulnerabilities of gay and bisexual men is one thing. I also think it's really natural that, you know, gay men want to foster sexual connection in the middle of a pandemic. You know, this isn't our first rodeo, so to speak. Gay men have lived with HIV for over 40 years now. And through that pandemic, we've been able to maintain and cultivate community and sexuality. And so, you know, I think that there can be good public health messaging around how to maintain a sexuality even while taking precautions against COVID.
What responsibility, speaking of technology, do apps play into like the breaking of CDC guidelines and kind of not following the rules? Because I do think that there should be a bit of an accountability of people who are just disregarding things, even though I understand the nuances of saying there's mental health issues here. People need to have those connections. But when you, in terms of that, what do you, I guess, what do you think that the responsibility of these apps kind of hold when it comes to that as well?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So, you know, when we are thinking about public health interventions, we try and kind of focus on the experience of gay and bisexual men and understand their health-seeking behaviors from a holistic perspective. So I think, you know, when it comes to the networking apps, one of the things that we really try and stress is that they make information available, and lots of the apps do. There's a great resource, if your listeners haven't heard about it, called Prepster, which actually uses some great kind of comic book imagery to talk about how to maintain safe and safer sexuality during COVID. You know, I think that that's really the key role that app companies can play, is making sure individuals who use those communities have access to relevant, up-to-date information.
Yeah.
Well, this is so interesting. Thanks for your work. We would love to have you back. That was Ian Holloway, director of the UCLA Gay Sexuality and Social Policy Initiative. Have a great week.
Thanks so much. You too.
Coming up on the show, she's become known as Gorilla Glue Girl. Teska Brown joins us after this to explain what actually happened and what she's going to do or not do with her viral fame. That's next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
In January, social media erupted with the story of Gorilla Glue Girl, who shared on TikTok her experience mistakenly using Gorilla Glue spray when her regular hair product ran out. Here's that clip.
Yo, look, my hair, it don't move. You hear what I'm telling you? It don't move. I've washed my hair 15 times and it don't move. Stiffwear.
Well, Gorilla Glue Girl does have a name. She is a woman. Her name is Teska Brown, and she joins us right now. Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I can't even imagine what your life is like right now. I mean, just in a month, you know, at that point, it was even a day probably. Your life completely changed. What is it like to be known as Gorilla Glue Girl?
No, it's the thing, at this point, it don't matter what they call me. Is what I'm going to answer to. So if they don't call me Jessica, I'm not answering.
Okay.
I appreciate that. Because that makes sense. I think for me, I think it was a difficult situation for me to take in, right? Because I was wondering why, like what happened? Can you break down the moment that everything happened and you using the Gorilla Glue and then going on social media? Like what was your decision making in that process?
I was, of course, rushing, trying to get my hair together to leave out. When I went to spray the Got to Be Glue spray, air came from it. Worst day of my life. So I'm running around this whole house looking for something else I could use, you know, to keep my hair together and, you know, all the flyaways. Well, I ran past the kitchen and ran past the refrigerator, and there was the Gorilla Glue spray at the top of the refrigerator. And I'm like, you know what? I can spray this. And when I get home, I can just wash it out. You know, I'll be all right.
But like, was it an immediate reaction that this might be the wrong thing? Or was it only a few hours later or later that night?
No, I'm going to say it wasn't immediate, because the thing is, after I sprayed it, yeah, I blow dried it to keep it in place. And it, you know, it turned like white, a little white. So then I sprayed the black spray and some oil sheen on top of that. And it was cute. So, I mean, I thought I was good. I went about my business. Yeah. But yeah, when I came home and took a shower, the water like dripped. Just dripped off my head. It did not move. It did not move. I waited a week before I called my mama, because now I'm panicked, because this is, I mean, nothing I'm trying is working. So when it got to the point where nothing, myself, my mama, all my sisters, we using or trying is working, that's what made me go to social media. I knew it was going to be some, you know, stupid remarks and, you know, that was dumb. But I figured, you know, somebody out there going to be able to tell me exactly what I can use to get this off. I didn't think the negative feedback was going to be that strong, that much.
When you're saying negative feedback, what do you mean by the negative feedback? Is it you were shocked by the reactions?
The trolls?
Yeah.
Or what? Oh, no. Somebody told me I should kill myself. Mm. Yeah. Cut your head off. That was stupid. She can't read. Like, it was bad. Wendy Williams said, you know, I was this nothing girl. She making it look bad for people like us. Like, it was bad. And the thing is, I knew it was going to be negative feedback from where I live. Never for one second thought it was going to be people I don't even know or don't know me. And that's what made it bad for me, because I really do have thick skin and I don't care what people tell me.
Wow.
So interesting, because I think that you never think about that, like, until that moment where you get shared on social media. And then you realize, oh, what these folks say, it is true. It is hard out there. And people are just, they'll do and say anything. What did you learn from the situation? Did you learn anything? Do you, like, is there any kind of, like, life-changing aha moment for you?
Yeah, the thing is, I was obsessed with my hair. Like, obsessed. Like, any little bitty piece of hair that was sticking out, I'm going to, you know, got to be glued down, get the blow dryer, and I'm going to make sure it's down. I'm to the point where I'm saying I'm not my hair. If I would have not cared so much about my hair and put a hat on and walked out the door, I wouldn't be going through this. Do not let your hair define you, because, I mean, you can end up in, I guess, this sticky situation right here.
So let's talk about the GoFundMe, because I think people saw the GoFundMe and I think that label, that word scam popped up, right? And also the photos on Instagram where you're standing in front of nice cars or you got the merch. What would you say to people who are calling you a scammer right now?
Before we even put a GoFundMe up, they had three for me. I have no clue what this was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had to go in and send my ID and, you know, cancel those accounts. They even had a Cash App account going. But when we started it, it was only because we read everything that was going to go on. So I was like, you know, I could, because people are upset because I said I could get a good wig. You know how much a good wig costs? If I'm gonna be,
I just found out recently. Oh my God, they're like $700, $800. Like they're really expensive. So,
but people was upset with me because why you still have it up? You know how long ago we tried to take that down? Long time ago.
So you haven't got any of the money?
We've been trying to take it down.
Oh, they just released it yesterday.
Yesterday, and even when I said $20,000. I was donating it to Dr. Obain, and with the remaining $3,000, I'm picking three families in St. Bernard Parish to help. Even when I said that, oh, she's just doing that for clout.
Okay, well, Teska, stick around because we want to know what you're going to do with all this new viral fame. I mean, you almost have, I think, 1 million followers or so on Instagram. And do you actually regret posting this? Let's get into that next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back with Teska Brown, aka the Gorilla Glue Girl. This has been such an interesting conversation.
Do you regret posting it?
Yes.
Oh wow. Yes.
I didn't know it was something until everybody started calling my phone. The emails was blowing up, the inboxes was blowing up. And for a minute, like even with my boys, I have two older boys, they were like, oh, my mama went viral. But then when it really hit, they were over it.
Essence, they had a op-ed piece that got the internet going, right? Where they posed the question, why is it so easy to dehumanize Black women when we make mistakes? And I wanted to know what your reaction to that was. Do you feel like because you're a Black woman that you were put on this pedestal and just basically ripped down? Do you feel a certain way?
At one point, I was known for all the good stuff, like around here. But now I'm just, you know, the Gorilla Glue Girl. And I mean, I can't say it's like a racist thing, because half the people that's telling me all this stuff, Black people. So, I mean, yeah.
It's just humanity sucks maybe at its certain level.
Yeah.
So is there a silver lining in this? Like, is there any sort of positive that's come out of this for you?
Oh, Dr. Obain.
And that was the doctor that did the procedure.
Yes, it was.
Came up with the formula.
Yeah. And with this formula that he used to take it out, like this is something that he made.
Yeah.
Like he made this stuff to take this out of my head.
Which is everything that he's a Black doctor. He came up with the formula. Like, that's pretty great. What do you think about those people who have seen your story and then now they're putting Gorilla Glue in their hair? What do you think about that?
If they looked at that video that I made, I said, don't do this. That wasn't smart. That's all I can say.
I feel like, I guess, what's the final message you have for everyone? What's a thing that you feel like you keep on trying to share, or you're doing all these interviews and just like it's not getting through?
That I'm really not this person, this, you know, this stupid person, for one. I am a really, really good person. I'm a giver. I'm a caretaker to my children, plus other people's children. Like, I am a really, really nice person. My little sister and another girl from down in St. Paul Parish, it was like, this situation couldn't have happened to a better person. Because they know for a fact, if I'm gonna eat, everybody gonna eat. Mm-hmm. But I just want them to know, like, get to know me. Mm-hmm. Everybody else was calling my phone, call me. The number's already on social media, they already have it. Call my phone, we can FaceTime. And I promise you, you won't talk like you're talking no more.
Well, we're wishing you all the best, and we hope you find your way on the other side of this madness, and you get what you want in your life and all the love that you deserve.
All right. Thank you. Y'all were so nice.
Thanks again for Tesca Brown for joining us today and for her honesty and vulnerability. You can see the video of this interview on our Instagram at LGT Show and wearechannelq.com. Coming up next, we've got What's Trending This Hour. Japan has appointed a minister of loneliness. What is it? And could this be something we see implemented over here? That's next.
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
We are back, and what an interesting conversation with viral star Gorilla Glue girl, Tesca Brown. I definitely didn't think we were going to be sitting down with her for like an hour to hang out. You only listened to a cut down version of it, by the way.
Yeah, so what can they do if they want to listen to the whole version?
Well, go to wearechannelq.com, and you can also find hopefully some video that will be uploaded very soon as well. And you can always follow us for all the updates at LGT Show and at We Are Channel Q on social media. But coming up this hour, the Supreme Court has given the go-ahead to New York prosecutors to look at Trump's tax returns. What we could discover, the Washington Post joins us for that in 30 minutes. We've got some learnings. Now, let's get into some What's Trending This Hour. Joe Biden addressed the nation following the announcement that U.S. deaths due to the COVID-19 have exceeded 500,000 today.
The people we lost were extraordinary. They spanned generations, born in America, immigrated to America. But just like that, so many of them took their final breath alone in America. As a nation, we can't accept such a cruel fate. While we've been fighting this pandemic for so long, we have to resist becoming numb to the sorrow. We have to resist viewing each life as a statistic or a blur or on the news. We must do so to honor the dead, but equally important, care for the living, those who left behind.
And we've got infectious diseases expert Dr. Michael Sagg joining us in just a bit, actually, to talk about this latest news and his reaction to this number in 15 minutes. And he's been through everything, even the AIDS outbreak. And he's even just blown away by this number, this tragic number that has come out today. Now, Japan has appointed a minister of loneliness this month to tackle the country's rising suicide rates. This is interesting. In 2020, suicide rates in Japan rose for the first time in 11 years, specifically among women. More people died from suicide in Japan in October than the total number of COVID-19 deaths up to that point in 2020. More tragic news, but hopefully this will make a difference. And they've actually been trying to do a lot around this. They recently had engineers design a robot to hold someone's hand when they're lonely. And one man and other companies charge people to do nothing except keep them company. So we're seeing this as a trend in Japan. And I'm sure we'll see this move everywhere across the world at different points, because loneliness and mental health seems to be a bigger and bigger issue. And that was What's Trending This Hour. What's happening in entertainment news, Ryan?
Yeah, so this is the year of the breakup. We're talking music, we're talking relationship. It is time for your T Report. Those pop culture stories trending right now. Now, I know everyone saw the news. Daft Punk is done. The French duo uploaded an 8-minute video on YouTube this morning titled Epilogue, showing one of the mass members getting blown up while the other one walks off into the sunset. That's intense. That's a really intense way of saying that you're done.
Right.
The electronic duo have been together for 28 years. And so, yeah, I know a lot of people, we play their music here on the station, and I know that's probably really, really sad. I like their music. And to be honest, I forgot what song I liked, but I do know when it comes on, I like it.
Get Lucky, the Lucky song. Lucky.
Cute. Yeah, that's the one. Lucky. Yeah. Also in the breakup world, we all know about Kim Kardashian West and Kanye West and how the big news came out that they are finally divorcing. Kim Kardashian is the one that filed for divorce, but the latest news coming out of it is that they're both seeking joint custody of kids, of their kids, which, to be honest, I guess I could expect, but I'm actually a little shocked that Kanye West would want that as well, just because I know that he's busy and he doesn't really, no shade, but he just doesn't seem like the type that would be the one that would be the primary caretaker. Like, I just feel like Kim would normally have all of the kids and just kind of take care of them because they have been separated for a while now at this point, according to a lot of those reports.
Yeah, so maybe they're making it work in this way, so it just made sense. And I think it would have made maybe more news or been a bit more tumultuous if she fought that.
Yeah,
so obviously he's doing well, by the way, mental health wise, because that would have been an issue
in terms
of custody. But custody wise, this would have brought up in court. But maybe Kim is just trying to keep it clean.
Yeah, I agree. What are your thoughts? Let us know at LGT Show Everywhere, of course. And of course, find any of these stories at WeAreChannelQ.com.
And coming up on the show, Dr. Anthony Fauci reacts to the news that the U.S. has passed 500,000 COVID-19 deaths. What do you have to say next?
Let's go there with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Now, sometime this week, just over a year after the first known COVID-19 death in the U.S. will surpass 500,000 deaths from the coronavirus. What a huge, crazy number to even speak right out loud. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the country's leading infectious diseases expert, said this Sunday that this death toll is almost unbelievable. And here he is on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd.
What has gone on now, and we're still not out of it, 500,000 deaths. It's terrible. It is historic. We haven't seen anything even close to this for well over 100 years since the 1918 pandemic of influenza. It's something that is stunning when you look at the numbers. Almost unbelievable, but it's true. This is a devastating pandemic. And
now joining us is infectious diseases expert, Dr. Michael Sag. Dr. Sag, when you hear that number, what does that make you think about? How do you feel?
It's breathtaking. It's overwhelming. And we tend to get numb by numbers, but I think all of us now certainly know of someone who died of COVID or maybe sadly a family member. And it's hard to embrace or comprehend. And we use a lot of the war analogies, but here's one. 500,000 deaths in 1 year is almost 10 times the number of people who died in the entire Vietnam War.
Wow.
And you think about the memorial in Washington,
yeah.
And that's over a period of 15 years, maybe 20. And in 1 year, almost 10 times.
And also cancer. Like, I look at other things that we fight and we're scared of as humans. Like, you have a friend or family member that gets cancer. That's scary. That number that we are at right now with coronavirus is much bigger than even cancer annually.
It is breathtakingly overwhelming. If we sit and just imagine for each one of those people, there's a family and there's friends, and it's just a huge loss. And a lot of it, frankly, when we look back on this, will be lives lost because of our inefficient and ineffective response. And I think that's on us as a society. We have to prepare ourselves for the future and never let this happen again.
Yeah, because I just can't stop thinking about that. It's about to be a year, like next month, from when we like shut down and the country shut down and the world just shut down. And it just feels like, no, there's a vaccine now, but is there still a reason to kind of feel hopeful? Because it doesn't really seem like we're out of this just yet.
We're not out of it just yet, but I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming train. So I think we're there. We just got to hold tight and do all the right things. We have the variants in our midst that are a little bit more contagious. So we've got to keep wearing masks and keeping distance and avoiding the crowds at least for another 6 months. And then we'll probably be through it or through most of it by then.
Yeah. Again, we're talking to infectious diseases expert, Dr. Michael Sag. And just to say, I did look it up, over 600,000 deaths in the U.S. of cancer. We're at 500,000. So I mean, this is, it's a huge number when we talk about it. When you see folks or like celebrities like Meghan McCain today on The View saying that she deserves to get the vaccine and someone like Dr. Anthony Fauci should be replaced, what do you think about that?
It's a little bit, you know, it's a lot of a selfish statement. I mean, first off, Tony Fauci has led us through this in a way that has been heroic. And for those of you who are about to get the Moderna vaccine, that vaccine came out of NIH under Tony Fauci's leadership. 2 days after the sequence of the COVID virus was released, he was in laboratories at NIH helping them design the first vaccine, which turned out to be the Moderna. 2 days, they had the vaccine candidate. That's the kind of leadership he's had from the get-go. And to say, well, just because I can't get a vaccine, he should be replaced, I think on its face says all it needs to say.
I think you're so right. And I think at the beginning of this, did you think 500,000 would be a number that we would even get close to?
No, I really didn't. When I sit and actually pause and comprehend it and process it, it's almost impossible to fully process. And so I think the other hope on the horizon for us is, even though there's a huge clamoring for the vaccine right now, I think supplies are going to increase dramatically over the next 2 to 3 months, whereas most everybody who wants a vaccine will see a way forward and will be able to get it. Then as we enter into the summer, we're going to have a little bit of a flip where we'll probably have more vaccine than we can use, but there'll be a group of people who are resistant or hesitant to get the vaccination. And so we'll have more of a demand issue that we have to address, not supply. And we just need to start focusing on how to get the word out of what this vaccine does, how effective it is, and how safe it is to the general public.
Really interesting. That was infectious diseases expert Dr. Michael Sagg. Thanks again. Have a great Monday.
You too. Thank you.
Let's Go There with Shira and Ryan, the new Channel Q.
Wrapping up the show as we always do with our Yes Queen of the Day.
Yes Queen.
So Alex Trebek's son Matt is giving some details about the family's decision to donate the late game show host's wardrobe to charity. It was revealed actually earlier this month that hundreds of pieces of clothing in Alex Trebek's wardrobe were going to be donated to the Doe Fund. It's a nonprofit organization that provides work, career training, housing opportunities, and more to those who have struggled with addiction, homelessness, and incarceration. And in an interview that was on Good Morning America, Matt Trebek said his father would have appreciated this gesture, and here's what he had to say.
This, you know, kind of just fits into what he believed in, you know, passing along kindness to others, so that it's nice to see that it still continues even after he's gone.
So I think this is really sweet. Of course, this icon will be missed, but it's nice that his family is doing something to share everything he had with those in need.
Yeah, and I'm not shocked by this. I think, you know, Alex Trebek's memory will forever go on. And this is just a beautiful way to really do something wonderful. And then, of course, have us all remember him in such a positive way as well.
Yeah, imagine wearing one of those suits.
I know, right?
Now, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she is killing it. She's raised more than $5 million for Texans in need as the state faces continued widespread power grid failures after that brutal winter weather and storm. So this is what went down and how she got $5 million. On Thursday, she tweeted out the initial push for relief for Texas. She shared this fundraising link that indicated 100% of donations would be split between a few nonprofits. I mean, there's a bunch of them. So I don't know. I don't want to like read the whole list, but she definitely chose some good ones that were on the ground doing great work. And in just a few hours, she raised over $1 million, doubled it again a day later. She finally hit $5 million. And now she's thanking everyone who's contributed and said that while charity can't replace policy, solidarity is how we'll face climate change and build a better world. Of course, people comparing what she's done to Senator Ted Cruz and everything he did not do. So that's an interesting, the irony of it all. And even, by the way, I posted this on TikTok, someone who's like, wasn't necessarily a fan of AOC being like, it's hard to not support her when she does stuff like that. So I'm happy she was able to do something good and help those in need. And that was our Yes Queen of the Day.
Yes, Queen.
Now, we are back tomorrow, same time, 4 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here live on Channel Q. Seppi Shine is joining us tomorrow. You're going to want to know her if you don't already. She's the first out LGBTQ plus Iranian American elected to public office in the U.S. She's going to be joining us tomorrow on the show. Plus, COVID-19 made governors popular until it seems like they didn't. And you know what? California's Newsom may lose his seat. So we're going to be getting into what could happen next on tomorrow's show as well. If you missed any of this or our interviews, including the interview with Gorilla Glue Girl, then just check it out on our podcast. Search Let's Go There on the radio.com app or where podcasts are available. It's that easy. We are sending you love and light.
And honey, remember to slay.
And now stick around for Loveline with Dr. Chris right after this.
Bye, y'all.